Hello, welcome to Brain Injury Radio Network. Tonight is our regular Wednesday installment of our program Recovery Now with your host, Kim Justice. If you'd like to know more about my story, you can find it at inaflash.org. I, too, am a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. I appreciate you tuning in tonight, and as always, I look forward to your input. So now, we'll get on with the show. Hello, and happy hump night from somewhere in Middle America. This is your host, as you heard, Kim Justice. For those of you that haven't heard that intro, it's an old one. It was the first one I used in my first year. And some of you might recognize who watched TV. Oh, what was his name? Hugh Laurie did a television show called House, where he was a brilliant neurologist. And that was the theme song, and it was kind of my weird sense of humor when I made that intro. The other thing that stood out in that original intro is it says, I'm a fellow traumatic brain injury survivor. And in those early days, I was the only woman host, and I was the only one who wasn't a quote-unquote TBI, but I didn't know that. As I say, tongue in cheek, from time to time on the show, it took me 17 years writing a book and becoming a radio host to learn anything about brain injury or to help me understand mine. And they thought in the beginning that I didn't belong because I wasn't a TBI. I learned for the first time then that I was a ABI, acquired brain injury is what that stands for those of you that don't know, because I had a ruptured aneurysm. And I said, geez, I don't know, traumatic brain injury. Have you happened to see the picture on my website? That was traumatic. That was the most traumatic thing I've ever been through. And it was my brain, and it was injured really bad. So I don't know. You know, I don't know if I agree with that. Fortunately, Craig, our founder, also saw fit that this is Brain Injury Radio and that our backgrounds now as hosts stem from a lot of different types of brain trauma. And so I'm glad that I got to stay, and that what I've noticed the last 2.5 years is that regardless of the source of the brain trauma, a lot of us have similar residuals or things we carried away from our precipitating event where our lives were saved. I don't downplay that at all, or we wouldn't be here talking and listening, right? But nobody gave us a, no puns intended, heads up on what we might be carrying with us for the rest of our life or for some shorter amount of time. No handbook was given out to the survivor. No handbook was given out to the caregivers. And we were sent out in the universe relatively clueless, confused, and isolated. At least a lot of us were. And what I've learned now, being here for a couple of years as a host from my wonderful guests in the audience, is an awful lot about myself and my brain injury and about this movement. And I've just been blessed to really meet some wonderful people, one of whom I'm going to bring on in just a minute. Recovery Now is a gathering place for anyone seeking recovery from the challenges of life on life's terms. I introduce topics and guests share their experience, strength, and hope. We discuss useful tools that have helped us lighten the load of our journey through recovery. More will be revealed. This is a We recovery program because it is in the We that we discover the new me. We focus on the four A's of recovery: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. This is a place for survivors striving to become thrivers. Some nights we'll have a featured guest like tonight, and others I'll introduce a topic of recovery, encouraging callers to join us in the discussion. The second part of the show is open mic and some great indie music, sure to inspire. Again, I'm your host, Kim Justice, author of In a Flash, Miracles Here and Beyond, found at inaflash.org. And if you want to like me, you can do that at facebook.com/inaflash.org. Now, one of these residuals I was talking about, I call, because I'm not the professional, I have always called something shiny. And that's when I'm on a train of thinking and something grabs my attention, maybe something out of the corner of my eye, and it just throws my thought process off the rails, and I cannot remember for the life of me what I was just talking about. My guest tonight, many of you have heard before. I'm just going to read you a little blurb that she wrote, actually, for those of you who are not familiar with Dr. Maria Romanis. Here's what she wrote, and where I first found her, or one of the first things I read, is something that she wrote for MedPage Today. They had a feature, the 10 questions series, in which they asked physicians for their views on the state of medicine. They were so impressed with Maria's firsthand account of what it's like to live with chronic symptoms resulting from traumatic brain injury that they included her article in their on their post. And it's a wonderful article, but in brief, what Maria says is, I am a staff pathologist at a Veterans Administration hospital. I practice general surgical pathology and am fellowship trained in cytopathology. I especially enjoy teaching and training pathology residents. My professional and personal life was limited by a severe traumatic brain injury I suffered during a rollover car accident in 1984 when I was 18. Although I do not have an outwardly obvious disability, my cognition impairments were causing me to have work ridiculous hours to get my job done. In April, May 2013, I went through an 8-week program of intensive holistic cognitive rehabilitation, or HCR, that trained me to become my own self-therapist. I learned exactly what was wrong with my brain and how I can deliberately use my conscious mind to prevent my impairments from causing disabled functioning. I am now functioning better than I have my whole adult life. I am no longer spending long hours at work and have energy and time to spare for myself, my family, and other relationships. I have gone from merely existing and barely surviving to recovering and thriving. Our kind of gal, right? It is not an exaggeration to say that HCR enabled me to take back my life. Although HCR is now considered practice standard, it is not widely available. It took me 29 years to get the help that I needed, primarily because the medical community knows little to nothing about how to recognize the cognitive impairments caused by brain injuries or what can be done about them. Pathology is my job, but my passion is brain injury recovery. I want to help educate the medical community about post-acute brain injury recovery and to advocate for widespread implementation of intensive holistic cognitive rehabilitation so that other survivors can optimize their own recoveries. And with that, I'm going to bring on Dr. Maria Romanis, I think. Maria, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
It's
Can you
so
hear me?
good to, yes, I can. It's so good to have you back with us. The only reason I was saying that is a lot of you know we moved. It's been just 60 days ago, and, well, I know you're in the Midwest, so you know Cox Cable. Maybe the world does. I don't know. But we've had our cable, which we have our computer, our phone, our landline, everything is with them. And it took 2 months for them to come and bury our cable. So our cable has been strung up by a series of six-foot shepherd hooks in our backyard meant to hold plants. And they came today, and we couldn't get the computer to work or the phone to work. Everything that had been working, hanging up on the shepherd hooks for 60 days, wasn't working. So I was just praying that they would get it figured out after taking so long and that I'd even be able to make it to the air tonight. So I just wanted to make sure that I got you, because when I clicked the button, it kind of went around for a few minutes, and I thought, no, please, I hope they did this right, because after waiting for 2 months to get it hooked up, you would hope there wouldn't be any problems. So anyway, it's wonderful to have you here tonight. How are you doing? How was your day?
It's kind of a busy day. I got kind of double duty this week because I'm taking a week off at the end of the month, so the work I would normally be doing at the end of the month is getting put into this week. So I've got double duty this week, so I've been kind of...
Well, then I will keep... I'll keep to our hour then, because I know that when you're doing pulling double time like that, you get extra tired, and it puts extra strain on you to do that. And so I appreciate you being here tonight. For those that don't know, Dr. Maria has been with us twice before, and when she was with us the first time, we got such a wonderful response. As she says, her passion is with brain injury. She's done an awful lot of work, and she knows so many things that the show went over very well. And of course, I did what I do. I offered her her own show. And she was gracious enough, and I am blessed that she said, no, she didn't want to do that. She's really overcommitted and does a lot of things, but she did have fun on the show, and she likes to be able to spread the word of the things that she's found helpful in her recovery, and agreed to be a regular guest on my show. So every couple months when she has time, I like to have Dr. Maria come back. And tonight we're going to talk about brain injury moments. Now, that when I said earlier, and I was kind of joking, a novice like myself calls it something shiny, and our professional, Dr. Maria, calls it a BIM, brain injury moment. So the longer I stay on these shows, the more I learn about the professional vernacular for these phenomena that I experience myself. But whether you call it a brain injury moment or something shiny, or you haven't learned how to define it yet, but you know something's not quite right at the way your mind is processing after your brain injury versus prior to your brain injury, and nobody has helped you validate that, treated you for that, discussed that with you, and you've felt crazy and isolated, we're here to tell you that, nope, it's real. By any other name or whatever name you call it, the phenomena is real. So tell us what a brain injury moment means to you, Dr. Maria.
First of all, I don't know that it is a professional term, brain injury moment, or brain
injury. It is because you said it.
It is the neuropsychologist I work with. His name is Larry Schuth, Dr. Larry Schuth. That is his terminology. And at the beginning, he was actually calling them head injury moments. And but somewhere along the way, they became brain injury moments. And BIMs, I don't know, somehow BIMs took on, whatever, seemed to take a life on better than HIMs, I guess. But, you know, some people don't like them. Some people don't like that term. And, you know, some of the meetings I go to, one lady, a mother of a survivor, suggested that we call it AIMS, A-I-M-S, Areas for Improvement, I guess. So, I mean, whatever you want to call them, they happen to all of us, okay? And as they are key, learning to recognize your brain-injured moments is key to recovery. And the thing is, I think most of us are aware of some of them, but we are not aware, unless we start looking for them, we are not aware of all of them. I would say, you know, before I started looking for them, I probably was aware of maybe 5% of them.
Wow.
Now I'm a lot more aware. And the fact that I've become more aware has had to do more with my recovery than almost anything. So that's why I thought this was, I mean, last time we talked about attention. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And this is our fourth time. First time we talked about kind of my story and a little bit about give back. Okay. The second time we talked 10 commandments for recovery.
Okay. And then attention.
Attention. And then this time, basically, what do we need to learn to pay attention to most of all? And that's kind of what I'm, you know, kind of taking. The most important thing to pay attention is your brain-injured moment. And the now, what is the brain-injured moment? Okay, I've got an outline here, so I'm trying to come down to the right page. It's not 100% organized. So,
a lot of us aren't around here.
You know, a lot of people, when I talk about my own brain-injured moments, people will say, oh, that happens to me all the time. And I will say to them, you know, that may happen to you. I mean, I think I've said this before. Please forgive me if I'm repeating myself. But I'll say something like, everyone has a few scratches on their CD, you know, on their brain CD, okay?
Right.
I have a few scratches on your CD, but I have thousands on mine. So multiply your all the time by 100 or 1,000, and you'll know what it's like to live with my brain, you know? And that seems to get the point across to them, you know, in a way that they can really understand. Because, you know, often when I tell people, like even my own, when I took off 2 months last year to do this rehab program, you know, the official word was that I was taking a sabbatical, okay?
Yes.
And so, of course, all the different services, I mean, the doctors in different services were like, ooh, what's wrong with her? Does she have cancer? Does she need chemo? You know, does she need surgery? You know, I took a medical leave of absence, okay? So, but I said, you know, I have a brain injury, and I'm, you know, 29 years after my injury, I'm finally going to go through rehab and see what I can learn about, you know, running my brain better. And everybody said, you know, most people said, oh, I always thought you were like me, because it's not that obvious. And then I would just pull my hair back a little bit, and they can see this huge patch where there is no hair,
mm-hmm.
you know, because I closed a hole with a graft from my leg because the skin was destroyed over where the skull was fractured. So, and when I show them that, they're like, you know, and I'm almost even glad that I have that. Okay, it's kind of a bummer to have a bald patch on your scalp, but you know, it's undeniable. You know,
right? And, yes,
and so. You know, so I forget where I was going.
Well, that people don't, you went on your sabbatical, you were going on your sabbatical.
Yeah, people think, basically this perception that the public has about brain injury is that a person with a brain injury should have problems that look strange or extreme, okay? And that people with brain injuries should behave like people who are severely, you know, mentally retarded or who have a severe mental illness, okay?
Right.
Mm-hmm. So nothing could be farther from the truth, and you know that as well as I do. So most people with brain injury it's not obvious, okay? And in fact, many of us are many of us are unaware of our own deficits. Okay, I mean we in the acute phase, if it's a severe injury, you know that you were not able to talk or walk or whatever. Okay,
right.
But once someone, you know, a year after the injury, a lot of people think, you know, if they're able to walk and talk okay, everybody thinks they're fine.
Exactly.
Okay. And the person's own brain feels like it's doing fine. Okay. And the reason why is because our brain doesn't have pain receptors. Okay. I mean, we have headaches, but that's sort of a different phenomenon. Okay. But the brain itself does not have pain receptors. And so, you know, can you tell me what it's like to feel brain injured? I mean, I don't feel like I'm a different person than I was before my injury. You know?
No, I don't either. Same person. I just, I feel better now that I've met other survivors than when I didn't, because I did think I'm so interested in hearing the different brain injury moments, because when you say at first, you know, like that year out, we don't necessarily know, and then we pick up on a few of them, and you found out you knew such a small percentage. It's so interesting. Every time you call, I learn so much, because the only thing I knew, like at that year point maybe, is that information used to come really quickly to me, and I could remember it, you know, but things came to me quick, like in school and at work, and I noticed I was working a lot harder, processing a lot slower, therefore working a lot harder, therefore feeling a lot more exhaustion and fatigue. And it was confusing to me, because that's not the way my mind generally worked. And I didn't immediately connect that, as odd as that might sound to a lot of people, to my brain injury, because it had been a year before and they told me I was fine and sent me out into the universe without any therapy. And I guess the other thing I'm very interested in the audience hearing is that, because I've got some newcomers out there, and that after that many years, you had the hope and the fortitude to go and get that treatment and that help that wasn't afforded you in the beginning that many years later. I just think those are really incredible things. But, okay, sorry, now if you remember where you left off, I'll really give you a hand. But sabbatical, you're going on the sabbatical. They're not sure why, where you work, because you look normal. But
they knew that sometimes my reports would be late, you know. They knew that, you know, they might see me, you know, go home late, and they say, well, pathologists are not supposed to work this late, you know, things like that. I mean, people just didn't connect the dots, okay? They would say, oh, she's a little bit different, you know, but they never picked up that I had a brain injury. Anyway, let's kind of go on to, the point I want to make is an impaired brain is often not able to perceive its own impairment. We do recognize, like, we're getting tired and harder, and things are harder to us than before, but we're really not exactly sure always why.
Right. Okay.
And so so how can we understand our own brain? You can't, you know, open it up like a book and read it, okay? When someone's face is dirty, like a child's face is dirty, they often don't know until they see themselves in the mirror, right?
Right.
So the only way that the brain can really see itself is if you basically use your conscious mind to pay attention to how the brain behaves. Okay? And that's what you learn when you study your own brain injured moments. Okay? So I'm reading now from my PowerPoint. Learning to pay attention to your brain injured moments allows your mind to see the reflection of your brain injury in the mirror. Okay? Basically. And
yes.
The thing is, it's very, very important. Because just like the image in a mirror is evanescent, it goes away as soon as you move away from it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you, it's very important to write brain-injured moments down and study them. Okay? That's the only, because we are so forgetful, like you said, we are so forgetful that we forget our brain-injured moments almost as fast as they occur. Okay? And that's why it's very important to write them down. Okay, so now, so what does a brain injury moment look like? Okay, I actually wrote some of mine down today. Okay, I was like, okay, let me just write my brain injury moments today. Okay, so, well, actually, let me just go through this list. And you know what? Before we start, I would like to give you guys a step-by-step about how you can get access to the material I'm talking about tonight, okay? And the way you can, if anybody's at their computer or if you're not at your computer, just write, you know, write these steps down, okay? And I'm going to, you know, kind of give you a step-by-step about how to get the Giveback Manual. And the Giveback Manual is something written by the neuropsychologist I worked with, Dr. Larry Schutz, and it was my first exposure to these ideas, okay? And that's how I knew that he could help me. Okay.
What's the name of it? I'm sorry. I got Dr. Larry Schutz, and his name. The name of the book is.
Oh, the name of the book is Head Injury Recovery in Real Life. That's the one you can buy, like from Amazon. But he wrote two manuals for. One is for survivors. It's called. I've got it right here in front of me. It's called, that's the family member one. The first one is called Self-Therapy for Traumatic Brain Injury, Teaching Yourself to Prevent Head-Injured Moments. At that point, he was still calling them HIMs. Okay. And there's a second manual that he wrote called Helping Your Family Member to Recover from a Brain Injury. Okay. And these manuals are available for free online. And I'd like to kind of go through a step-by-step about how you can have access to them, okay? Because
super.
The material I'm talking about is in here, okay? And if people want to, they can sort of follow along. So if we go to GiveBack, if you're at your computer, you can the site would be givebackorlando.com. So GiveBack, Orlando. .com. Orlando spelled like O-R-L-A-N-D-O .com.
Got it. I put it in the chat so they can go ahead and click on it. Anyone in the chat can click on that link I just put in. And
okay.
Audience, again, givebackorlando.com, and you can follow along with us.
Another GiveBack site, but it's harder to get to the manual from there. So I'm just going to – this is the older site. It's not fancy, but it'll get you to the manual quickly. So just click on the brain to get into the site, okay, and then it'll take you to a sign that says page that says Welcome to Give Back, and then it'll have like 10 little brains, 5 across the top and 5 across the bottom. The last one on the bottom is resources. If you click on that, okay, you'll get
mm-hmm.
a list of resources, and there are right the first and second resources are these manuals that I talked about, okay. And so just click on self-therapy for head injury, and you will pull up the manual, and you can read it for yourself right then and there, okay? So the material
Perfect.
That I'm going to be the material I'm going to be covering tonight really is the beginning of the manual, okay? After the introduction, page 3 is kind of right where I'm kind of starting. I was trying to put this PowerPoint together, and I was like, well, you know, let me see. Let me just kind of go over this information again. And it's like, you know, I really have a hard – I really don't know that I can say it as well as he does. So that's why I'm referring to you. This manual was the first step to my recovery. And the principles in this manual are basically what were the basis of the 8 weeks that I did. It was basically him, you know, putting me through into situations where I would have one brain injury moment after another and teach me how to study them and what I needed to do to overcome each brain injured moment, okay? And so that's why I would like to start off with this. So now I'm going to go to my PowerPoint, and the PowerPoint is kind of almost lifted off of the material in this Give Back manual, okay? So this is not original with me. It's, you know, I give credit, full credit to Dr. Schutz, okay? But basically, I'm going to go over some of this material, like kind of point by point, and then I think I will finish off by kind of going through some of my own brain injury moments to see, you know, what they look like, okay?
Great.
So I'm going to kind of read through it. I think it's faster to present information this way, and you and I can stop and chat about it, you know, at whatever point you want, okay?
Oh, great.
So basically, so I'm going to go, if you want to read through through the manual, you can actually follow along. So head injury survivors can spend their lives trying to prove that the injury has not changed them in any important way. It's easy to do, and there's plenty of evidence. Most survivors can still do everything they could do before the injury, even their most advanced job and hobby skills. If they could run a computer before, they can still do it. If they knew how to do brain surgery or rocket science, they still do. If they could speak four languages, they still can. If they knew the whole history of ancient Sumeria or ancient Motown, they haven't forgotten it. Okay. They are 98% the same as they always were, but they usually feel 100% the same, and they often work hard to claim to be 100% the same, and they're the ones who don't respond. Okay.
Yeah.
If you spend your whole life trying to prove that you don't have a brain injury, you're not going to get better. Okay. So as you said, you have several steps. You said awareness. Isn't that the first thing that you talk about? You have awareness.
Awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation. First, you got to be aware of it.
Yeah. What we're talking about tonight is the awareness piece. Okay. And how to develop that. So there's another way to live after brain injury. It involves working hard to notice what has changed. But most survivors don't do this. It would be unpleasant and negative, and most people want to think positive and feel good. So, for example, many survivors, we were talking about this at a brain injury meeting last night, most survivors kind of get stuck in ruts, where they're doing the same thing over and over again, you know, often they avoid their situations in which they have problems until their world becomes more and more restricted. And many survivors end up not having any social contact, you know, or staying at home or not working, and sort of doing the same things over and over again because safe and familiar, and when they do the safe and familiar, they don't get in situations where they're overwhelmed. Well, the reason they get overwhelmed in these situations is because of brain injured moments, okay? And when you do the safe and familiar, you do cut down on the brain injured moments. But it's not a way to live it's not a way to grow as a person, let's put it that way, okay?
Right.
So anyway, going back now to what it says in the Give Back manual. Besides, all survivors get a powerful feeling from inside that they are doing things correctly at all times. The injury has shut down the brain's quality control system, jamming it in the all-clear position. So when I am making a mistake, like tonight, when I was leaving, there was a thunderstorm. It was lightning outside. And I wanted to leave, and I wanted to come home, but I was afraid to to walk with all that lightning. It was really stormy. You know how it is in the Midwest.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, okay, I could wait out the storm, But if I do, then I may not make it home in time for, you know, our interview, okay? And so I could go to the police, you know, the VA police, and ask them to escort me or take me to my car. But it's not dark, and I don't know. I didn't know if they would do it. I know they do it after dark. I do that. You know, I've done it many times, but it wasn't dark yet. So I called my husband. I said, "Tom, please, could you come pick me up?" You know, and so while I was waiting for him to come, I got my give back manual, okay, and I wanted to copy some pages. And I want to have, you know, certain things right in front of me for tonight. And while I was doing that, I wasn't paying attention to the time, okay? Or the time was passing. Okay, so then John calls me. I says, Maria, I've been waiting 5 minutes. And so I wasn't watching myself. That's one brain injured moment, okay? You get involved in something, and your brain forgets to watch itself, okay? Most survivors have a very poor sense of the passage of time. And we've talked about this before. You know, I use timers at work to kind of give me that sense of the passage of time, okay? And what I should have done is put a timer, okay? When I have a specific thing that's a certain time, okay? But I forgot to set a timer, and so I didn't notice. So then in my hurry to go to the car, I still wasn't quite done, so I stuffed the give back manual in an extra bag that I have in my office. So I have the bag I took this morning that has my planner and some notebooks in it that I carry back and forth. But then I had this other bag where I had the give back manuals in. So as I'm leaving my office, I need my umbrella to get, you know, it's a few steps to the car. Of course, as a woman, I can't, you know, let myself get wet.
Heavens, no.
So I'm counting, you know, when I close my door, it's like, okay, umbrella, one bag, two bags. I go down to the car. Dawn takes me then to my car, okay, all the way to the other side of the hospital, to my car. And I get out of the car, and I reach for my bag in my purse to get my keys. Then I realize I don't have my purse. And I was like, I have two bags. So I have two bags. And it's like,
But not your purse.
I had another bag tonight. It's like, you know, I should have my routine is two bags, okay? But what I should have prompted me, what should have prompted me about this situation, number one, I was in a hurry, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, there was something different about what I was, you know, doing, okay? I took another bag. The moment I got that other bag, I should have said, okay, now I'm going to have three bags, okay? But I didn't, okay? So I hope that takes me all the way back. I had to go upstairs, unlock the lab, go to my office, unlock my office, go to my desk, unlock my desk, and then all the way out again. So that was another, you know, 10, 15 minutes gone, okay? And then I get in my van. So that was when the brain injury moment occurred, okay? And typically what happens with brain injury moments, once you have one, it's sort of like a domino effect, okay? So the first brain injury moment was I was a little bit stressed out about, you know, getting home in time, okay? It was raining, and I waited to the point where I, you know, had to make a decision, called my husband. Then I was kind of feeling I was hungry. I hadn't eaten. So in the meantime, I went to the, while I'm doing the give back stuff, I go to the break room, and there were some donuts there, and guess what? I had a donut. Why? Because I wasn't thinking. I was just, like, under stress. I was trying to get things done, and of course, I'm not thinking. That's another thing about brain injury. That's another brain injury, not thinking about the consequences of what you're doing, okay?
Mm.
So then I, you know, I I miss the time for John. Okay, that's the second brain engine moment. I pick up the two bags. At the time I picked up the two bags, my brain was saying, good, all clear. Okay? And it was saying, you know, it was not recognizing at that moment that it was a brain injury moment. It wasn't until I got to the van, or, you know, my husband took me there, that I realized, okay? So that was like 1, 2, 3, 4 brain injury moments. Bang, 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 bang. Okay? And it was all kind of started out by, you know, this unusual situation where it's raining so hard. I mean, you know, so new and novel situations, for one, kind of promote brain injured moments, okay? Being in a hurry promotes a brain injured moment. You know, being tired, and I'm not that tired today. I don't know. I mean, I've been doing a lot better about getting the sleep that I need, and so I wasn't feeling tired, but I, you know, I guess maybe I had a little bit of adrenaline going, you know, because of this interview, okay?
Right.
So going back now to the GiveBat manual, it says the injury has shut down the brain's quality control system, jamming it in the all-clear position. So when you're making the mistake, you don't realize it until the outcome, you know, kind of slams you in the face, okay, that I went to the car without the key. Okay, so the thing is, that is a classic thing. That whole situation is a classic thing about how our brains have changed. I'm not saying this sort of mistake couldn't happen to anybody. It could, okay? But it's more characteristic for a brain injury because in a normal person's brain, there are two modes of doing things. There's the automatic, sort of, like automatic pilot mode, okay? And
right.
Automatic good for once you get in the air, you know, if you're flying, once you get in the air and you're just going along and nothing's going on, right? No storms, no nothing, no airplanes about to hit you, you know, that's your automatic pilot mode, okay? But your executive mode, where you're thoughtful and careful and slow, that's your executive mode, which is what pilots use when they're, you know, taking off and when they're landing, right? Or
we hope.
Or storm, okay? They take the controls, right?
Right.
And the thing is, the pilots are, you know, are watching for that moment where they need to take over, okay? They're paying attention to the surroundings, and it's like, we need to take over the controls right now. But in the brain-injured brain, we don't recognize that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Right.
That executive dysfunction, that frontal lobe business, okay, basically means that unless your conscious mind tells you to do so, you will do things on the quick and dirty automatic pilot mode. Okay?
Yep.
And that's what I was doing when I was leaving my office. Like, okay, 1, 2 back. Good, gone. Okay? And I should have alerted myself, you know, to the urgency. You know, I was feeling, I should have alerted myself to pay more attention. Okay? So to pay attention, to watch myself, to be aware of my situation. Okay? So, you know, there's certain things I learned in my rehab to say frequently. Watch for the danger, okay? Just basically situational awareness, self-monitoring, pay attention to yourself, okay? And pay attention, I mean, basically to pay attention. And what mistakes I made, a lot of them were that I wasn't paying enough attention, okay? Because I didn't recognize the situation as one that I needed to be extra careful in. I was sort of going to be a pilot. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the brain, going back now to the give back material, the brain says everything that the survivor does, everything the survivor says is coming out just right. It says I'm no different than I was before the injury. And it's not just a weak feeling. It's a feeling of total certainty, a lock, dead, solid, perfect, a slam dunk. You think you're doing things just right, okay? It's the feeling that the person's always gone when things went just right. It feels good. It feels right, so why question it? So you know, so some people question the feeling because it's their style to be concerned about screwing things up. And that's why Larry says I've done so well. Okay? He says that, first of all, pathology is not an area where you can afford to make mistakes. Okay? So probably the area I was functioning my best was at work. Okay? Because I'm always concerned about messing something up. Okay? And I always pay a lot of close attention to everything that I do. Okay? But it's in the other areas of my life, like going to my car and back, okay, getting my bags and leaving, those sort of things, my brain doesn't prompt to say, you could mess up here. Okay?
Right.
I have myself to pay attention to that. Okay?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, if you start to look for things that you've screwed up, you can find them. And there are more errors, more missed opportunities, more things you wish you had said another way, more bad decisions, more times when you forgot to do something important or forgot a critical message, and yet each time you felt okay about what you were doing. I mean, how many times, just the other night, I was getting things ready for the next day. And I was like, I should look at my clipboard. I think there were some things I needed to take care of tonight. And, I was like, well, I don't want to go into my bag and dig out that clipboard. So I was like, okay, let me just go from memory. And then, of course, the next morning at work when I pull out my clipboard, I was like, oh, I forgot those two of those things. Okay. I needed, So, I mean, it's like I knew. I was like, oh, yeah, I got it, but I didn't double-check myself, okay? So those are other examples of brain injury moments, okay? So as soon as you start looking for things that you're doing wrong, you start to find them. And once you do this, you can see that for some reason, these errors don't feel wrong when they occur. And for some strange reason, you aren't thinking of yourself as a person who makes more mistakes now, even though you should. And you, as you think about that, you begin to realize that there's something wrong with how you evaluate yourself. That is one of the key things about the brain injury, okay? The brain doesn't see how it's behaving, okay? The brain doesn't pay enough attention, okay? That connection, that, where the pilots are paying attention to what's going on in the atmosphere or whatever, that sort of surveillance is what's very, very weak in a brain-injured brain. So unless you tell it to, it's not going to go from automatic pilot to the thoughtful and careful mode, okay, unless you tell it to. And
right.
So the survivors who realize this are the ones who start recovering on their own. And that's why people don't need 8 weeks of rehab like I got if you take this information very seriously. I'm not saying that you're going to get the results I did in 8 weeks. Probably you wouldn't, okay? But I
no.
think over, if you take it seriously, the stuff in the Give That manual, and constantly remind yourself of these things. Because I have these little cards that I don't look at them every morning, okay? But I look at all my, I have like, 30 recovery strategies, and I go through them like, two or three times a week because I forget them. Out of sight, out of mind, okay? I constantly have to remind myself of what I need to be doing. It's never automatic, okay? And tonight was just evidence of this. So I went all day with having only like 3 or 4 brain injury moments, and within half an hour or 15 minutes, I had 4 or 5 of them. Okay. So at first it's hard to believe that something like this, something pretty major, could be wrong, and you would have no idea about it. You wouldn't even feel that you might even feel it can't be wrong with you. And when I first read this material, Kim, I thought exactly this. I thought, that may be true for everyone else, but I'm special. Maybe there is something, maybe I don't know myself that well. And it wasn't until Larry put me in situations over and over again, and new and novel situations are where brain injury moments occur the most.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned more about how bad my brain was in those 8 weeks. It should have been devastating, okay? It really should have been devastating. But I also learned what I can do about it, okay? So, okay, now I'm going back to the give back. I keep on going kind of on the side, and I keep on going back to the give back material, okay? So to recover, you must consider that you might have these problems. Not be convinced of them, but just decide to look into them. And that's what I would encourage everyone to do that's listening. You know, start writing down when something doesn't go right, okay? You need to avoid trying to prove how recovered you are and begin looking at the possibility that you are only 98% recovered. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And start looking for the 2% that isn't, because that's where you get back control of your life.
Hmm.
Okay? So
excellent.
Let's say an engine, a car engine, or a space shuttle, okay? Or a... let's do the space shuttle. What was it, that O-ring? Okay. That caused the whole thing to explode?
Yes.
Okay. One little part messed up the whole thing. Okay. And that inability for the brain to pay proper attention to itself and to switch from the executive to the automatic, from the automatic to the executive when it's needed, That is our O-brain, okay? And that's
mm-hmm.
That's why we need to pay attention to our brain injury moments, because we have our skills. It's not a fact that we forget things easier, sure. We don't learn things as quickly, sure. But there are certain situations where these things become more of a problem than others, okay? If we write down information that's coming to us, no, we don't forget. If we forget to look at the information that we wrote down, we have a brain injury moment, okay? There are compensations to really get a lot better. I'm not saying we're going to get 100% better. It never will happen, okay? But we can get 98%, we can get to 99.8 maybe, and that will make a huge difference. Okay, so, and then this next part in the Give Back material sort of talks about this automatic pilot business, okay? So I'm going to kind of skip along, and to page, if you're looking at the Give Back manual, it's page 13, and it's cheat sheet for noticing head injured moments, okay? So
okay.
Number one, things I wish I had not done, or things I wish I had done differently, okay? So things I wish I had not said, or things I wish I had said differently. And I think I can go on. Each time I'm telling you one of these things, I can come up with a story. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, I want to save time so we can discuss some things after. Things
sure.
I said or did that got a bad reaction out of people. Okay, things that I said or did too quickly, things I said or did without being careful enough, things I forgot to do, things I wanted to do but did not get around to doing, things I was told and later forgot, repeating myself without realizing it, forgetting where I put something, getting too emotional, wasting time, spending too much time on something that was unimportant, or spending too little time on something that was important.
Ouch.
Being unable to put something out of my mind when I need to, making the same mistake I made before, taking unwise risks, misunderstanding people, having trouble getting others to understand me, and when searching for something, overlooking it. I mean, this is just something to get you started to recognize the brain injury moment. okay? And another page I'd kind of like you to pay attention to in the Give Back Manual is page 31. And on page 31, there's an analysis form for setting a head injured moment. And basically, it's kind of a menu, kind of a menu-driven thing. So, and I would recommend that, you know, people make copies of this, you know, I don't know, 20, 25 copies, and start writing down, start working through this analysis form for the different brain injury moments that you mistake and that you make. And people have different flavors and different patterns of the of these brain injury moments. And as you go along, you'll start to see what your particular pattern is. And that's a good place to, and that gives you something to work on. So the first part of that head injury, the analysis form is my mistake. You know, be specific to describe the mistake, where it started, on what day, at what time, who suggested writing up the head injury moment. Did you notice it yourself, or was it something somebody else pointed out to you? And another thing I would strongly recommend is to ask the people that you trust around you, who you know have your best interests at heart, to be open with you when they notice a brain injury moment, because they probably will notice 20 for every one that you do. Okay.
Wow.
And one of the things it talks about in the family, or in one of these manuals, it talks about having the survivor keep track of their head injury moments for the day and numbering them, and then having their therapy partner, their family member or friend, also write down their head injury moments and comparing them at the end of the day. Okay.
Wow.
And so one of the things that's really needed for recovery is humility. Okay. That was another thing that Larry said, is that I had pathological humility. Okay. So if someone says something wrong, I'm always ready to believe them. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that can be taken too much the you can take that to the extreme, and too often I have taken it to the extreme. So Larry said you need to come to the middle, okay, about the pathological humility thing. But you need to be, you know, I don't like it when my husband, points something out, okay? But I need to say, thank you, John, okay? When my kids say at 11 o'clock, shouldn't you be in bed now? Okay. And the first thing, my first reaction is to defend myself. You know, I'm doing something important or whatever. But you know what? The most important thing I need to do for myself is go to bed on time. Okay? And I need to accept that they're caring for me. Okay? Even though my ego, my back bristles when they tell me these things. But we need, survivors need to be appreciative of the intact brains around them. Okay. So who was I who pointed it out? Okay, I'm going back to that form. Your state of mind. Okay, the state of mind, and it has a list of options. Excited, optimistic, enthusiastic, confident, motivated, impatient, annoyed. So basically a lot of emotions can trigger brain injury moments as well. Okay. So like tonight, I felt a little bit pressured, right? I was hungry. I was maybe a little bit scared, I guess, about the lightning. And today, there's another brain injury moment I wrote up, and it was I did something. I was excited that I had lost quite a few pounds in 1 week, okay? And it was making a simple tweak to my, and I don't want to get into all of it, but I saw my doctor last Wednesday, and we talked about something I should try differently. And it worked. I mean, it really made a big difference. So
great.
This morning, I'm really kind of happy about this. Of course, with the donuts tonight, I'll probably gain a couple pounds. morning, I'm just wanting, like, I want to tell Dr. Driscoll. And so, you know, I did not, you know, I thought I'm going to send her a quick email. Of course, you know, for me, by the time, you know, a quick email can take me 15 minutes, all right, to get it just right.
Right.
Okay. And 10, 15 minutes passed by. And did I need to do that during the middle of my day? No, I didn't. I mean, I worked through lunch anyway. So it's not like I was cheating on my employer with anything. But, and they get a lot more out of me than, I'm not on a time clock. I've already put in, I came in on Sunday. I went to work on Sunday because I knew it was going to be a hard week. So I've already put in 34 hours and probably another 20 more by the end of the week. So not cheating anybody. But 15
right.
minutes, I really didn't get that out of the middle of my day because I was enthusiastic, okay? I was more impulsive, okay?
You might have forgotten later, though, too.
But what I should have done is written it down, okay?
No, that's true. Yeah.
And so the impulsivity is really like from your automatic pilot, okay? It's sort of like from your emotional sort of brain, okay? And like teenagers, okay? Teenagers often do things out of their emotions, right? Because
yep.
their frontal lobes are not fully developed. They don't have the brakes on, okay? So I didn't put on my brakes today, okay? I should have put on my brakes and get that email. Because I was like, oh, it's going to take me 3 minutes to write this email. But, of course, when I looked at my time, it was like 15 minutes had passed. I was like, really? That email, like 10 lines, took me 15 minutes? I don't know. It's just, you know, it's just that, you know, the brain into your brain is such a phenomenal thing, okay? Going back to that, who was I with when I started to make the mistake, okay? And then task factors. You know, I was trying to do, and have some, these are like options that you can check. I was trying to do something new. What was new? I was trying to do something hard. What was hard? It required planning and organizing, careful timing, or mid-course corrections. It required cooperation, agreement, or assistance from someone else. So those are like task factors. And this is all menu-driven. You can just like, you know, we'll walk our way through this form and just check mark a lot of this. Process factors, how I went about doing it. I should have warned myself. The first option is I should have warned myself. It happened in a situation where I've had head-injured moments in the past. Okay?
Yes.
I wrote up this mistake before, but I didn't use my fix-it plan this time. Why? Okay? I was trying to do something the way I would have done it before I had my injury. I wasn't expecting to do it at all. It wasn't on my daily planner. Why not? Something unexpected happened while I was doing it. What? Okay. And then, I mean, I'm not going to read every line of it. The next section is fix-it plan. For the next time I'm in this sort of situation, put that activity on my daily planner and make a plan for success the night before. Trigger myself, sound a warning by whatever you choose to do so. Warn myself about a head-injured moment by saying whatever you choose to say. Before I act, stop and think through what I need to do. So it kind of walks you through the brain injury moment and how to start and analyzing it and coming up with a plan to get better. And it is, it's a pain to do this. During my rehab, I wrote up 150 of these moments. And I probably could have 8 weeks. So that's just 20 moments in, basically 20 moments a week. But today, I already wrote up 10. I had five in like that half an hour, and I wrote up five more of a day. That's 10. And for me to sit down and, you know, work through this form for each one of them, you know, I really don't need to do that anymore. What I typically do now is I just write down the moment. And then in my evening review time, okay, I kind of have a, like, end of the day sort of planning time for the next day and reviewing from the day. I kind of go through the head-injured moments and ask myself, you know, what happened? What was the situation that triggered this moment? Okay. You know, these things in this form I basically kind of have in my mind now. And what am I going to do next time? okay? Next time when I am changing a routine, like taking another bag home, okay?
Yeah.
I need to think through the impact of that change on what I do, okay? I should have stopped and made a plan at that point, but I didn't. I didn't recognize it, okay? But by going through this exercise over and over and over again, you will start recognizing those situations in which you have trouble, okay? And when I look at those 150 moments that I wrote a year ago when I was in rehab, I'm looking at them. I'm like, you know, I don't make those mistakes anymore. I wouldn't make that mistake today. Why? Because I've learned, you know, I told you about a bunch of them today, but in the past, I probably would have had at least 10 times as many, okay,
through
my day. If my constantly paying attention through my, you know, telling myself to watch my situation, to use my timers, to, you know, it's my continually using my strategies that is functioning, really helping me to function as well as I am doing. So, yes, I've had a phenomenal amount of work this week. But I'm doing all right. You know, I'm doing all right. You know, it's because people are on vacation, two people on vacation, and also because I'm, you know, this other, you know, there's been a lot of buildup. I mean, the last few weeks have just been incredibly busy. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
People on vacation and everything. But, you know, I'm doing better than I had other summers. And I'm finding that I'm handling things without being overwhelmed by them. And all it takes is a little bit more planning, a little bit more mindfulness, a little bit more thought, you know, being a little bit more one of the neuropsychologists that founded this sort of rehabilitation talks about living an examined life, okay? And, yes,
mm-hmm.
examination is often not so fun, okay? Introspection is not so fun, but enables me to live a better life. You know, to be able to, you know, anyway, I've taken up, you know, an hour of time, and I was thinking perhaps we should just, I mean, maybe open it to questions, or we could talk about it some more. I mean, I
sure.
have a lot of stuff I could say.
We can do that. To folks, the number is 424-243-9540. Talking to Dr. Maria Romanis tonight, and we're talking about brain injury moments. And a couple of the things I picked up, and then I'm going to bring you online. Be sure to press 1 if you call in, and I'll know you have a question or comment as opposed to just listening. But, you know, some of the things as I was listening to you talk, I was thinking about, you know, those cues you were talking about, and I think something shiny is one of mine when I can tell that a brain injury moment has just happened. It's a way that I can stamp it at that moment, see it for what it was, and, you know, try to come back. Another one that you brought up, an acronym I use, and way back to the beginning when you said some people don't like the BIM, and you suggested another one, all I could think about that other one, and I don't remember it now, is that it was a lot more complicated, and I don't remember it now. But brain injury moment is an easy acronym, and another acronym that I use is HALT, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. When I've got any one or a combination of those things going on, I'm going to be more apt to make those mistakes or have those brain injury moments. I concur with you. My 94-year-old Nana, my friends, you guys have seen me post her, you know, one of her old saying was the faster I go, the behinder I get. And so when you were talking about when we're doing something on high speed, my efficiency is not as good because I'm agitated and jazzed. And, you know, I could almost feel what you were talking about, I mean, you're right, I'm from the Midwest too. We get one of those lightning storms going. It's raining really hard. I'm in a hurry. I know I've got an interview. Even if I know I've I know my stuff, it's a stressor. If I've got a pile of stressors going on, and I would hate to have those sheets right now, because when you said this summer has been good for you, this has been one of my worst summers. And I'm almost thinking of going and signing up. If you can do it after that many years, I can do it after that many years. But I think it'd be helpful to go through those forms, because what I was finding is a lot of those residuals we have really rearing their head with what I call full basket syndrome. And I think you were referring, the way you were describing that is too many new things. And you know, between the move and the illnesses and the family and trying to give everybody their due and remember self-care, which is the first thing that goes with me, unfortunately, a lot of the time. The one thing that I hung on to through all of that has been to do my show. Now, we can play tapes of reruns or get someone else to come to the show, but one of the things I realized is that for me, routine is very important. I think for a lot of us, routine is very important. And I knew I was off routine in several key areas. And one of the things I talk about here is not just that survivor-thriver stuff, but also not just having a life, but creating a life worth living. And when it's such a struggle and all the residuals or character defects or brain injury moments, whatever you want to call, are just kind of blaring all at once because too much information. You know, I just get in a lot of sensory overload from a lot of places. I'm not accustomed to getting it, and those things have caused me, or I've allowed myself, some my fault, some not, to get off routine. And so then you add the hungry, angry, lonely, tired, or the going too fast, counting through your things, line listing, two bags, the umbrella, da-da-da-da-da-da, and forgetting the purse. Now, I've walked off, and just one other thing, and then I'm going to let somebody else on and go, but when you were talking about a partner or recovery partner, your significant other, whoever might be watching and help play back some of these things to you, you know, there's a lot of people that are with people who don't understand brain injury, and they think you're being sloppy or that you can help this. And it isn't such a warm, understanding, nurturing, ingratiating kind of support. It's more of a people forget because you look normal and seem capable and act normal. And so, you know, saying that my mom used to use was, I'll say to people in general who did things, silly things, why don't you use your head for something other than a hat rack? And, you know, I think when you said earlier, people you trust, we were talking about this the other night, and we were talking about it in terms of practitioners, whether it was alternative or traditional or whatever it would be, that, you know, you really have to be able to trust and query who you're working with or who you're trusting in your life, be that a peer support partner or a practitioner or anyone that you're going to expose your vulnerabilities to. Because we can already, like you said, not recognize more than half of the stuff that's going on with us, not want to recognize those things. And if we feel shamed or damned for having them, shut down completely and hide them to the best we can hide them, and then not get that benefit of learning quite the same. So I think it's really important, you know, that you have people you can trust where you're not getting in trouble for forgetting. I mean, it isn't like you could help it, right? I mean, what if your husband was really ticked off at you that he drove all the way there, you made him wait, and then, by God, you forgot your damn purse, you know? I mean,
my husband, nothing shakes him, nothing. I mean, I'm very, 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 very fortunate. I mean, I would like to see him. Sometimes I say things to make him angry. I mean, I just want to see him get angry sometimes. But he doesn't. He's just so even keel, and I've been blessed, you know. But I'm sure that many husbands would have gone very upset. Absolutely right. One thing about if you're going to give someone permission to speak into your life in this way, make sure that they read that family manual, okay?
Yes.
That, you know, the Give Back Family Manual. And, you know, actually the chapters of the manual are like one page, okay? And each, you could just take like a page at a time. As far as the survivor goes, take a page at a time and work through the manual with your partner, reading their part of the manual, you know, and just work through it together. And, you know, a lot can be done to improve one's own functioning. And, you know, it would be nice if everybody could do this 8 weeks of rehab. It's not possible, at least not right now. But,
right.
You know, for most people, and actually this sort of rehab exists only like in a handful of places in the country. So I'd like to see that change. But, you know,
I would too, and I think the manual very, very helpful for the survivors and the family, because if you have something tangible just besides your behavior and your word for it to show somebody that this is something that happens with people that have had a brain injury, and would you get angry with someone who has diabetes, cancer, you know, a broken arm? Would you think it was appropriate to get angry and shame someone with a broken arm because they can't carry a stack of newspapers? You know, it doesn't play the same or seem as obvious from what I've heard on the program from guests and survivors sometimes and the environment around them, that they don't get cut the same slack. And sometimes people who even have more obvious residuals to deal with don't get cut that slack, because people just, I don't know, they have expectations and it makes them angry. Sometimes I think that anger is fed by the fear of the caregivers, but that's a whole other topic. I'm going to open up a microphone here. Your old buddy Les, I know you've been dying to talk to Dr. Maria because you've been typing all the way through here about how much you love her. So here you are.
Well, first of all, you're just so darn real. We need a virtual you for all of us. We do. I appreciate you so much, and I mean that very sincerely. If we would have had people like you who are real, you've been through it, and you make it feel so real when you're talking about, like in the storm and the rain and calling for someone to help you. And, you know, it's like, wow, I can feel that. And when I was I typed earlier, I feel like I'm in the devil's triangle sometimes when I get directionally challenged. Things like that. People don't always understand. They need to slow down, calm down, and just think a while instead of just go full speed ahead before they trip and hurt themselves or have a wreck. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to remember how you said it earlier. You said something about 98%, but do you think about the 2%? Can you remember what you were talking about? I'm forgetting how you worded that.
So basically, our brains may be 98% okay, all right?
Yeah, that's what I was.
It's not okay that messes us up, okay? And it's that 2% that we need to focus on fixing. Okay.
Thank you. That's what I was thinking about. That
the only
really
way we're
hit
gonna,
me.
Excuse me?
Go ahead. That really hit me because I meet so many survivors in my local support group. We had a support group meeting the other night, and one person was hung up on how bad their memory was to the point they thought it was a lot worse than it was to us. And we kept reminding them, hey, you're among family. You're among people who love you. You can mess up. They're saying, no, you don't understand. I don't feel like me. And she was saying something similar like you about the 2%. She said, they tell me I've only got a small deficit, but it feels giant. And what do you do when a person is like that to help them break that, you know, that habit and that pain they have that they've lost something big?
Well, there is the grieving. You know, we were talking about that last night. I mean, we were talking about that last night at the brain injury association support group, you know, that we do need to grieve. We are not the same people we were before. That 2% really does change a lot of who we are and how we interact with people. And, you know, it may not be that obvious to us, but, I mean, how many times have you heard that people have lost all their friends or certain family members have turned their backs on them? You know, and it's really the, you know, the person hasn't changed as far as how they feel inside.
Yeah.
But their behavior has changed, okay? And a lot of that behavior that drives people away is when we get overwhelmed and have catastrophic reactions. Okay, and we can talk about that.
Yes.
I see what you mean.
Where we are so overwhelmed by everything that we are not acting like ourselves. Okay.
I can tell right now. I was just going to say I can tell myself. I've had an extremely busy 4 days, and I heard myself say to myself today, said, wow, I didn't know I could go this much, as I a few minutes later said, man, I got to sit down before I fall down. And I said, wait a second. Those two things just caught each other. And I said, I've got to sit down, slow down. I was at work today. I wound up working until 6 o'clock today. And yesterday, our support group meeting, we had a brain injury support group meeting last night. It lasted 3.5 hours, normally lasts 1.5 hours. I thought I could last that. I felt energetic, and I ran out of energy when we were leaving. So I've been pushing myself past my limit. And so I heard you talking about quit testing yourself or something earlier. I can't remember how you worded it. And I'm through testing myself. I found out some of my limits, and I found out some of my limitations. And so,
and why? Because you basically recognized that you ran out of energy, and you kind of made a plan not to let that happen again. I mean,
exactly.
Learning to pay attention to the signs, and if you were to write them down, Les, if you were to write these moments down, I bet you would start to see patterns.
Okay, I'll do that immediately. And I was listening to you talk about writing things down.
Writing things is hugely important. Seems like it doesn't seem necessary at the time to write it, okay? Your brain says, I'll remember, okay? But don't trust your brain, okay? You know, as I'm writing down my brain injury moments, I have a clipboard, and on my clipboard I have my schedule and my plan. But I also have, flip it around, and I have a place for what I call running notes. And running notes are like things that come up during the day that I want to remember. Okay, they're not something I have to do, but something I want to remember. If it's something I want to do, I put it into my planner, okay? But if it's something I want to remember, I put it there. And so, like, my brain injury are something that go there. And I have, like I said, 5 written from through the day, and then 5 written that I wrote down right when I came home so I could talk about it. So, but yeah, I mean, so just having that, I mean, it's a pain to carry that clipboard around all the time. But I find that clipboard is really key to a huge accepting that clipboard.
Okay.
Well,
if I have to get a clipboard tomorrow, I'll do it because I have caught myself sounding like you and out in the storm, really.
Yeah, it could be something else, okay? I mean, on my clipboard, I have like a calendar page, okay? And it has a schedule, and then it has, you know, things to remember, things to, like, people to call, you know, and then it has, you know, like every quarter hour it has a list, and I write down a plan. I pre-structure my day, and I write down a plan for every, you know, 15 minutes or half an hour, okay? And then on the other column, I put actually what I did, okay? And
okay.
So that way I can, at the end of the day, how closely did I follow my schedule, okay? And, you know, I'm still not following it exactly the way Larry would like me to, because it's, because the nature of my work isn't always conducive to it. But I am trying to do it as best as I can, and you know what? It makes a huge difference.
This is just a question, thinking about what you're saying. Do you think there's a particular type of brain injury planner that you could create that would be best, or that you could purchase that you think would be the best kind to use? Because I've got a couple of planners. They actually confuse me. Go ahead.
So for mentors, I have tried so many different organizational systems. And, things that I've made up on my own, things that I've bought, and I'll tell you what I'm using now, and it may not be what I'm using next year.
Okay.
So what I'm using right now, because there are two things you need to kind of keep track of. The two big areas, the memory that's affected by the brain injury, the types of memory that are most affected by brain injury are, number one, episodic, okay? Episodic is like the things that have happened.
Okay.
Like through your day. Okay. Like, how many times I don't remember what I did this morning or what I even did an hour ago. And I don't know until I look at my planner and see that column and say, oh, yeah, that's what I did an hour ago. Okay. So that has to do with like episodic. Okay. And things I want to remember. Okay. If I'm taking notes, if I go to a doctor's office, or I go to a counselor's office, or I'm listening to a lecture, I put that information into a steno notebook, okay? And I put a date on that steno notebook when I start using it, and I put a date when I end, okay? So I might use that book for 2 months. But it's to kind of collect information that I want to keep track of. Like if I have a conversation with somebody, and I want to remember the details of that conversation, I will write down, two or three facts from the conversation that I want to remember, because I will forget, okay?
I had someone ask me what I had for lunch today, and I said, I do not remember, and it bothered me. And so I need to start keeping track like you're talking about. Maybe the next time you're on, you better say, Les Paul, did you get your planner straightened out?
Well, you know what? We could talk about that next time. How's that? Why don't we plan on talking about planning, organizing, information, okay?
Wait a minute. I want to go back to that other one. What did you call that? Catastrophic
reaction.
Reaction.
Or when you have teenager moments, or like things are coming too much, things are coming to you all at once, and you overload, okay?
That's been my summer. I want that topic next.
Information overload, yeah. I think we both had that, Kim, a lot. But
you're not as mean as I am. He doesn't have the – at least I've never seen him do that, but I get mean. And with the way that you categorize – the way that you described it is what I've been experiencing a lot of, and really having to check myself on a few of those things. But there's others I just haven't cared. It's been, like, out of control. Just out of control.
You've had something going on, Kim. I would not, I would do all that. I would put your self-care first of all, okay? You're doing so much, and you've had so many changes. Your move, the illness in your family, you have had so much on your plate. You know, it's no wonder that you're bimming, okay? Making bimming moments.
Mm-hmm.
No wonder that you're bimming. And so, I would start writing down some of these moments. Okay, what went wrong here? Oh, I didn't eat when I was supposed to. I was hungry. I mean, like you said, that hungry, angry, lonely, tired thing. Or I didn't plan. I should have planned this better. What can I do about, what do I know? I would say making an evening planning time is hugely important, okay, to, think through what you're going to do the next day. And if you're too tired to do it the night before, do it the first thing in the day, okay? You know, when you have your breakfast or whatever, get out your planner, you know, write down the things that have to be done today, okay? Don't put everything that you possibly want to do today. Things that have to be done today, okay? And then you can put, like, on the side, okay? Fill in the blocks of your timer, the things that have to be done. And make sure you leave enough time for them, okay? And if you haven't left enough time, when it comes time for the next item, go to the next item and schedule more time for that first item later. I mean, that sort of thing. I mean, it's not always possible to follow all these rules. Larry has all these rules about using a planner. But basically, having time to plan ahead and think through what are the hard things I'm going to have to deal with tomorrow and make a plan, okay? And then keep that plan at your fingertips for when you actually enter that situation tomorrow. You know, you're thinking and planning when your mind is calm and clear and your adult is fully functioning, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And in the rush of the day, emotions are riled up when you're angry, when you're tired or whatever. You know, you have that written plan that you can refer to. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do. I picked up on what you were saying. No, it's okay. One thing I want to underline, I guess, that you talked about, and that's that, like anything else, you know, losing weight, getting an exercise program, learning a foreign language, whatever, we'd like to think that we could think it and it becomes so. But what I heard you talking about is taking these notes and then reviewing them in the evening. You're actually doing homework on yourself, and you're taking those notes and then you're checking them and you're learning from them. And the process of your recovery has consisted of a lot of work, consistency, being dedicated to moving that direction on your recovery plan, and the follow-through, and not wishful thinking or a perpetual pity pot. What you're doing is work. And sometimes I think, well, I can only speak for myself and at different points in my recovery, you know, sometimes the level of frustration is to a point, not lately, not this one with me, but I've heard it with some others, and I know I experienced it earlier, and that's that the level of frustration can roll over into apathy, you know, and it just, too much work, you know, too much fatigue, and, or I don't care. You know, whatever it is, I'm going to work on it and try to make it better, but that consistency and follow-up isn't there like what you're talking about. And I think when people are building a life worth living, that's, you know, like you pointed out, we were talking about awareness, one of my first four A's, but action, you know, is awareness, acceptance, action. You know, after you become aware, after I became aware of some things, it was a big deal to accept it and then to take the action. And if you don't take the action, then being aware is great. You'll be aware part of the time. You know, like you were saying, if you're not writing it down, if you're not reviewing it, then if you ever found the awareness, it might occur to you from time to time, oh, that's what's going on. I missed a few meals, or I was up later last night. But it isn't going to be a consistent path of recovery.
What are you going to do about it tomorrow? Yeah, are you going to do prevent this tomorrow? We often
Precisely.
Don't get to that point on our own. Okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
That is the whole. You know, we need to take the time to plan for ourselves. And actually, right now, I do need to do that. So
I know.
My husband.
I know.
My husband. My husband just brought me some watermelon, and that's my cue that it's time to stop.
All right.
We have a ritual
on
the summer that we eat watermelon together before bed. So.
Aww, that's so sweet.
I would love to talk more, but I really do need to leave now.
Thank you.
Well, we'll make our next date, and you have a good week off. Be in touch,
right,
folks. This is Dr. Maria Romanis, and I suggest that you look at the website givebackorlando.com and check out these manuals. We'll talk about them as we let her out to eat her watermelon. Thank you so much for being here with us tonight, and we look forward to your next visit, Maria.
You and Les decide what topic you want next time, okay?
Yeah, we're going to arm wrestle over it.
We're going to have a big, we'll flip a coin or something.
Goodbye, guys. I'm actually going to say goodbye, all right? Good night.
All right, good night.
Bye, good night.
All right, well, we'll have to fight over that. Okay, I'm going to play a song and come back, okay, with you in just a minute. So grab a sweet tea, will you? And I'll be back. Okay, everybody. Again, that was Dr. Maria Romanis. She is a MD and a PhD. She works at the VA as a pathologist, suffered a brain injury herself when she was studying to be a neurologist, has stayed in the medical field, and really has studied a lot, as you can see, about brain injury and compensatory strategies to help herself, and is willing to share those things with others. And so we've had her back several times, and we'll have her back again. She's so down to earth and open, and really enjoy the things that she has to share with us. So make sure to check out that website, because it's two free manuals, one for the family, one for the survivor, on givebackorlando.com. And I'll put that in the chat room again, givebackorlando.com. And you'll find the Give Back manuals and get to hear part of what we were talking about tonight, which was brain injury moments. Anybody have any of those? I told you earlier that if you wanted to write down some of your brain injury moments lately, that when we got to this part of the show, we could talk about those a little bit and compare notes. One of them you might have seen, and I forgot, this could be a brain injury moment, but if any of you, I'm not on that page, but the one that scrolls the program page with the pictures on it, on some of them lately, I have had a picture of a cracked egg, and that cracked egg signifies, well, an egg, a cracked egg, obviously, but I make my husband, because I'm not a cook, he drew the short straw when it came to me and cooking things like lunch and dinner, but I do try to send him breakfast, and so I make a hard-boiled egg, and he likes Greek yogurt and a piece of, you know, fruit, and so I make him a breakfast bag each morning. And Monday nights, sometimes Sunday nights, I start hard-boiling those eggs for the week. And more than not, I have walked away when the things are on the burner, and I come back, and the water has evaporated. The eggs look like they've thrown up. They crack, and the white is all over the place. Icky, icky. And it's just not a pretty thing. And that's a brain injury moment for me. And Maria talks a lot about timers, and I made a comment in the chat room earlier. You've got to remember the timer for it to be effective. I still haven't done that about eggs, but I knew that if that picture's up there and I remember to put it there on this particular show, then you will recognize that, because I'm sure that you've had that particular brain injury moment or one very much like it. So we're going to come back for the second part of the show. It'll be open mic. We can talk about anything that's on your mind, our brain injury moments, anything Dr. Maria had to say, or just anything that's on your mind tonight. I'm going to do my quick public service announcements, play a quick song, and then I'll come back and start opening up the mics. Let me see. Where is my public service announcement? Aha! Do you know someone who has suffered brain injury, concussion, contusion, occipital injury? Gosh, I have a hard time with that word. Closed head injury, traumatic brain injury, acquired brain injury, anoxia, hypoxia, dementia, tumor, stroke, aneurysm, amnesia, Parkinson's disease, brain cancer. A survivor support line is now available to provide telephone support to those who suffer from all levels of brain impairment. 4-PEER-11 is a survivor-run, funded, and operated and managed emotional helpline. We do not give medical advice, but we do have two compassionate ears. We have survived some form of brain injury and or we are a caregiver who's significant in the life of a survivor. The number to call is 855-473-3711, or if your memory's not so good, 855-4-PEER-11. Live operators are available from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. If a call comes when an operator is not free, please leave a message. Messages are returned on a regular basis. Now, they're not making callbacks unless you leave a message, so make sure that you do leave a message. This 9-to-9 thing, our dream is for that to be a 24-hour support line, and we are looking for volunteers, and whether that's 1 hour a month, couple hours a month, you do get thoroughly trained as to what we can do and what we don't do. Most of the time, if somebody is calling the support line, it's because they feel they need to be heard. And sometimes that's the most important thing you can do, is listen. And so if you're interested in paying it forward or helping another survivor, being able to make that commitment from your home. Sorry, I can't read. I've got to quit reading for a minute in the chat room and focus for just a second. But if you're interested in participating in a little peer-to-peer support, paying it forward, until I get the appropriate number to call, you can drop me an email and I will forward that to Lori Fatel, who does the show The Science of Happiness on the second and fourth Wednesday of each month, right before my show. Lori is a great gal, and she is the person in charge of 4-PEER-11. Her and Deb Schlag do a lot of work on that, and I will make sure that you get hooked up with them. If you're not friends already, you can write to my website or go to my website, inaflash.org, and there's a tab that says contact the author. That'll send an email directly to me. Say I'm interested in hearing more or volunteering for 4-PEER-11, and I'll see that you get hooked up. There's going to be a training session coming up soon, so if you've been thinking about a way that you can help and give back, this would be a great place to start. Like I said, it's nobody is ever going to know your number. Your privacy is protected by an intermediary line that they call into that rings up your phone. So you have nothing to lose. You don't have to dress up. You don't have to drive. You don't have to leave your house. You just have to have a phone and a willingness to help. So, again, inaflash.org, drop me a note, and I'll see that you get hooked up for the training. And these messages have worked, by the way, because several of you have been gracious enough to volunteer after knowing that we have the need, and you're going to make the difference in the life of another survivor who's reaching out sometime after 9. You know, we don't always need help from 9 to 9, and so we'd like to be there all the time. Brain Injury Radio is on 7 nights a week, and all of these live shows are immediately archived for on-demand listening when the shows conclude. So you never need to be alone in your brain injury recovery, or if you're a caregiver, a neuroprofessional, or another interested party, you can learn a lot from listening to those over 900 and some odd archived programs that we have. The number to call in on is always the same for all 7 nights of the week at this time, and that's 424-243-9540, or toll-free number inside the U.S., 855-473-3711, or toll-free outside the U.S., 202-559-7907. We want to thank TBI Survivor Network for sponsoring Brain Injury Radio, and I especially want to thank Lash Publishing for sponsoring Recovery Now. Lash & Associates is the leading publisher on brain injury, blast injury, PTSD, and concussion. I encourage you to check out lapublishing.com. Now, we've been talking about a couple freebies tonight, and I encourage you because, you know, you can't beat the price. And if you really want to have these tools on board, whether you're going to use them now or you just put them away for a while, and when the time is right, you reach out. On LA Publishing, when you go to their website, you'll see something that says Brain Injury Journey. That's a magazine that they came out with a year ago, April. Comes out 4 times a year. And you'll see that you're able to buy a subscription and get a hard copy mailed directly to your home 4 times a year. Or, here's the can't beat the price, free online version. So you're able to get the free online version exactly like the hard copy, and they just email that out to you 4 times a year. Some really wonderful resources available on there. One of the things Dr. Maria was talking about earlier, and I don't know if she was specifically talking about tip cards, but that's one of the things that Lash Publishing has. And tip cards are things that they're small pamphlets that help us remember things. And there's a lot of different topics. There's an extensive section for veterans, for survivors, caregivers, a lot of new information on sports, concussions, and so forth. And so I encourage you to check out that magazine. So tonight, the free things that we've gotten, 2 of them are give-back manuals from our guest, Dr. Maria Romanis, and you can go to givebackorlando.com and get the survivor manual or the caregiver and or the caregiver manual. That's going to give you a lot of information plus some sheets that help you take notes on your brain injury moments and just help you go through the process by giving you some written instruction and how-tos. And then the third is, of course, Brain Injury Journey magazine, because there is just a plethora of information there from some excellent survivors and professionals, many of whom have been on the show. So I encourage you to check that out. The last thing I'll say, then I will play one song and bring on my mics again. Again, you can call in to 424-243-9540. Make sure to press 1 so that I know that your hand is up and you're not just listening. I see we have a couple of those. Thanks for your patience, and I'll be back with you in a moment. Just thought I'd let you know that I had a brain injury moment Monday night on Craig's show. I said the wrong guest was going to be on my show tonight. I did not say Dr. Maria. I said my guest for next week. So now you all know that Dr. Maria Romanos was my guest tonight, and next week, Steve Almond is going to be my guest. And Steve Almond has spent 7 years as a newspaper reporter in Texas and Florida before writing his first book, the story collection My Life in Heavy Metal. His nonfiction book, Candy Freak, was a New York Times bestseller. His short fiction has been included in the Best American Short Stories and Pushcart Prize anthologies, and his most recent collection, God Bless America, won the Patterson Prize for Fiction. Almond writes commentary and journalism regularly for the New York Times Magazine and the Boston Globe. A former sports reporter and play-by-play man, Almond lives outside Boston with his wife and 3 children. And right now, he is in the crosshairs because of something he has recently written. And as you guys know, I have a lot of veterans on my program, a lot of survivors, caregivers, neuroprofessionals, but I have not had a lot of athletes on the program. But this one particularly caught my interest and really made me laugh. Steve is a really funny guy, but he wrote something called AgainstFootball.org. Well, you can look at the website, www.againstfootball.org. And I had to laugh because from the time I was a little girl, and no offense, just my opinion and sharing a story, things like baseball and basketball, I knew you could get hurt, you know, in any sport. Heck, you can get hurt walking down the street or driving your car. But when I'd see football, it reminded me, and in college, I took a course in ancient Roman history. And what football reminded me of many, you know, 30 years before, or excuse me, I guess I wouldn't have been that old, would I? 20 years maybe before I took that college course was gladiators, the 21st century gladiators, because it seemed like it was so purposeful to run into each other and clang heads. And I don't know, I've never known the rules, never really understood it. That's why I thought maybe I'd leave a lot of the sports stuff to the guy hosts to do. But Steve Almond is a really funny, talented guy, and I'm very interested to hear about the NFL's reaction to what he's just written, and he'll be my guest next week. So be sure to tune in for Steve Almond. And now I promise you I'm going to be right back after I grab my sweet tea. And I'll start opening the mics. And let's see, who should we hear for a moment tonight? How about a little blues? This is Honey Boy Turner, The Blues for Omaha. And then I'll be back and pick up your calls.
To the place I love the best. got stuck in Lincoln with the blues for a while. Can't afford a bus ticket, might have to steal myself a car. That's what I'm saying.
Honey Boy Turner, if you want to buy or listen to more of his music, you can find him at ReverbNation.com/Honey Boy Turner Band or go to their website, www.HoneyBoyTurner.com. Les, we've got somebody patiently, not so patiently, they left. Hey, I was just going to pick up your call. Call me back. Good golly, Miss Molly. That was a Little Richard, by the way. Good golly, Miss Molly.
Back,
do you remember
Rocky him? Richard.
Yeah. Okay, caller, I'm sorry. If you call back, I was just going to unmute you. There you are. Wait a minute. I think that's you. Hi, area code 864. Were you just holding your hand up? No? Okay. I'll put you on hold for a minute. Maybe that wasn't the call. If you do want to talk, please press 1, and I will know that you're wanting to ask a question or talk and not just listening. I'm sorry for the person that had their hand up. I was just going to hit your button.
You were bad.
I know, and your number disappeared. So I didn't get to you quick enough, and if that's the case, I apologize. And otherwise, the miracle of technology drops calls all the time. So call back in, and I promise I will get your mic unmuted. But in the meantime, I will unmute our friend at area code 484. And is it still going to be 484 after the big move, Jenny?
Yes, it is. Hello, Kim, my sister, and hi, Leslie,
oh,
my brother.
Oh, my goodness, it's my sister. Hey.
Jenny.
We missed the heck out of you.
I know. I'm sorry, Wynn. I was trying to read in the chat room, and I got confused there for a minute. I need new readers or something. I get blurry vision at this time of night. Maybe it's just old eyes, but now when is the move going to be, the big move? Jenny's getting ready to move to another state closer to family.
Wow.
And it sounds like a lot of fun and exciting times ahead, and they're coming up sooner than I thought.
A lot sooner than this gal thought, and then boy, has it got me in a tizzy. I was originally had tried to get in with the Center for Independent Living left, just so you know about that.
Yes.
And there was a 1 to 3 year waiting list. My mom was really impatient to get me close to family. And it's in the same state. It's just down where my family is in their county, which is only like 15 minutes away. And they went ahead and bought the house for me. I haven't even been there, but I've seen inside
pictures.
Oh,
my goodness.
And it's gorgeous. But it's going to be starting next month.
Hallelujah.
I'm hanging from the ceiling by my fingernails.
Well, I bet you are. First, there's the element of change, and then there's the extra stress of, you know, sometimes we have fear, even when it's something good, just because it's different and it's change. And then when we're somebody with a brain injury, that sorting and packing business and the getting ready to move can be such a drain, you know, so much fatigue. For a while, I know that I ran on adrenaline until I hit the wall, and then my adrenaline was...
I've already hit the wall, and I haven't even started. Just the idea of I did not realize
that
now.
It is so awesome to hear from you, though.
It's awesome to hear from you guys. I wanted to talk to you. I just needed somebody to bring me down off the ceiling. But what I realized is it's the transition. I'm excited about being there. I've seen the inside pictures. The place is amazing.
Okay.
And it's my
wow.
own private forever home. I can actually set down roots and never have to move again.
Oh, that's awesome. That's beautiful. I mean it.
And it's you have to get permission. And they go through a huge thing for you to even have residency there before you can even buy or move a place in. And my mom got this done. My mom was talking like 3 or 4 weeks. She got this done in less than a week.
Wow. She made the earth move beneath your feet.
Yes, she
Carol
did.
King.
And I told her this is a project we get to share together because we've been disconnected and so far away from each other all of my life prior to my injury, and then post-injury because I live so far away and her health, we've not been able to reconnect. And this is just wonderful because it's an adventure for us both. She's going to help me learn how to garden. You know, she's going to help me decorate. It's going to be a fun adventure for both of us.
Cool.
Now, but Jenny, what do you attribute the change, the relational change after all this time? Because I know when we first started talking a couple of years ago, like so many, there was some estrangement in the family and that distance you were talking about, and now it's like a 180, you know, a lot of accommodations. You've talked to your sister, your mother, these relationships are getting rekindled. What do you attribute that change in dynamic that had gone on for so long to now?
Like so many survivors, I actually now love completely, and I give completely of my heart, and I just feel completely. And I was not able to feel that before my injury. And my mom is able to feel it. So I'm the one who reached out and told her that I missed her and started talking to her. I took the first step of reconnecting with her and
okay.
telling her what I do and telling her how hard I've been working, and she's been able to see my growth and has gotten so proud of me that she's just absolutely beaming, and it has helped her feel good.
Aww.
Because she's always loved me, but before my injury, I always pushed her away. It was my way or the highway. Now I'm like, it's not about me, it's about family, reconnection, love.
Super duper. So that's great, you know, and you got to take a risk. That was a risk for you to reach out because you could have drawn back a stub. You didn't, thank God, but you must have thought about it for a little while because a lot of time had gone by and it must have been scary to take that risk and to be the one to reach out. But I'm so happy that you did take that risk. You know, whether it would have worked out as well as it did or not, it was a good growth experience on your part because you took care of your side of the street by reaching out toward the family and trying to have that relationship.
I honestly believe that a lot of survivors, like myself, isolate ourselves until we get to a point where we realize we're missing our heart, and we need to reach out and express our heart to those that are family because they still love us regardless of what's happened. They just don't understand, but if we express and we talk to them, even just by phone or just by email, they eventually reconnect with us. But we have to take the first step of putting ourselves out there.
Right. And I would encourage people, I think I'd go a step further and just say that if it doesn't work out the first time, to not let that make you feel defeated because you did your part of the growth process and that person just isn't ready or hasn't germinated to the point where they're ready to carry their end of the water. But you should feel proud and happy that you made the positive action.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're totally correct in that. Do not give up because I worked with my mother for over 2 years. And I actually got mad at her at one point when I had one of my impulse control issues. And I got mad and said I would never talk to her again. I hung up and I didn't talk to her for months. So it takes time and never give up because once you give up, you're stuck.
Well, I'm proud of you. We're both proud of all of us are proud of you. Wow. That's awesome.
Well, I have told her over and over and over how much help you guys have helped me in learning how to regrow because I didn't have a clue when I came home. I didn't have a clue 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago when I met you guys. I didn't have a clue. I didn't know my elbow from my eye.
Well, her guest tonight, Kim's guest, talked about having 98% there and that last 2% can make all the difference, basically. Am I saying it right, Kim? I don't want to mess it up. And that it sounds like you got to that 2% and you worked on it. She talked a great deal about you need to work on that 2%, not the 98% that's all right. And that 2% can feel, in my opinion, like the 98% when you have an injury. And so, man, I'll say it for you, Kim. I know you're proud of her, and I am too, because we've known her for a long time and watched her grow. You're one of our buddies.
You know what's even more exciting?
What?
Yes,
what?
I'm going to be close to family that I love, and I know that I'll have support and help and love out there. But I also have a dear survivor friend that I've known for over 2 years on the Internet, and she lonely lives 15 miles away from where I'm moving.
Cool.
So we're going to be able to
move. So you're going to have a buddy and family. How awesome that's going to be. Well, Les is right. That is so neat to hear, because part of the reason I think, well, I won't speak for Les, but part of the reason I came here as a host is that I wanted to try to help people and pay it forward. And, you know, we have watched, you've been with us since the very beginning. The first time our mics went live, you were there. And you, during all of our times when we made every mistake in the book on the air, disconnected ourselves, couldn't type, lost our chat room, did everything you could possibly do wrong. And
you
sometimes. I know. I'm trying to tell these new early hosts, and Jenny, I'm going to have to set up a meeting and have you tell a story to the early platform hosts about what the crazy original seven were like. And
now just meet Jenny and the rest will be fixed.
Yeah, but I have a bad habit of yakety yakety yak.
That's all right.
It happens. It happens.
Jenny,
that's exciting.
And you know what the best part about the whole place is? Well, there's several things about it, but it's got land all around it, which means I won't have neighbors next door. It's an older community. It's called a certain type of estate. And they have a community pool, and I love swimming. That is such good physical therapy.
Oh, good.
Wow, that is the lowest impact form. They say that's one of the best for you. You don't fall, right? But the other thing is it's better on our old joints than some of the other exercises. They say swimming is one of the best ones that you can do. Well, that just sounds
still,
like you have everything really close.
Well, I still walk on my treadmill, but since I've had the other brain injury survivor, he's moved out. I had to move out because I'm selling the house. And he needed to move back to where he could start building his, rebuild his foundation, which is with family. So he's with family now, which is a major blessing for him. But now that I have the house to myself, I've actually, the last couple of days, I've been going up and down the stairs, and it used to be for 2 or 3 years, the only time I would leave the house was once a month, absolutely, when I had to go get groceries. You remember?
Yep.
Yes.
Well, the last three weeks, I've had 3 days of physical, mental, and social all at once activities, 3 days in a row, and getting out. And I have not frozen up. I didn't have any panic attacks until after it was over and done with, and I was by myself.
Awesome. But you did the deal. You did the deal, though.
I got her done, but afterwards, of course, I had the racing thoughts of what could have, what did I, what might have I done, what could have gone wrong, what did I say wrong, that kind of thing. We suck and guess ourselves.
That'll
look
go
at what
away,
you've
though. It'll go away, though, because woulda, shoulda, coulda, you didn't. You know?
What I've also realized is that yesterday, I was woken up immediately, startled awake, and this is a horrible thing for any survivor. If you're startled awake by an unfamiliar loud sound that's coming in your window, it scares you, and you immediately have anxiety before you even open your eyes, even think about what the heck is going on. It was metal to grinding metal sound outside. Loud sounds startle us, many of us. And so I ended up with a huge anxiety attack before I even opened my eyes. And I spent the whole day with a racing heart, the breathing heavy, no matter what I did, no matter how much meditation, no matter how much deep breathing, or trying to refocus or journalizing, it did not get rid of it. And what I realized is, okay, bring it on. If this is going to be a bad day, okay, I can handle a yucky day because tomorrow is going to be another day. And I knew that, and I still had anxiety when I went to bed. I was able to fall asleep, And I woke up this morning refreshed, like it was a totally new day, and yesterday was forgotten.
Wow.
Wow.
You're a true gem.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are. And, well, it's nice that this is the kind of program that no matter where you are, as long as you have a phone, as I may or may not have said earlier, we stream from about 135 different places to all 50 states and 36 countries. So you're just going to another county, but you can still call.
That's
even though
right.
You're going to have a buddy and family, we want regular reports about this.
We
darn
do.
It.
Oh, you know me. I'm going to give you regular reports, and you know me.
We need the Jenny report.
A blog or a group of my timeline, for goodness sake. So I'm going to be journalizing the heck out of this whole move.
What an exciting time. And, yes, I remember the times you wouldn't leave the house, and it was hard to even leave for groceries. And Jenny is a great testament of hope for those of you out there who are in your beginnings and you're having that tweener stage that I talk about, where you're just finding out you can't go back to exactly who you were before, but there's kind of a big black void in front of you with a question mark. You don't really know where you're going to, and we lose a lot of people in the tweener stage. And so I think what all of us are trying to say is don't give up, because the three of us on the line right now, and I know a lot of the people in the chat and on the board right now and out there listening, have all been in that place, and there is hope. We all process at a different rate, but as long as you keep hope and faith and are willing to take baby steps, if that's what it needs to be, for as long as it needs to be, as long as you're taking action to move forward, there's always going to be someone there holding the lantern on the path that you're on that'll help keep you there. And so if you can hang tight, there's going to be other people that are going to help
right.
you, and you will be able to build a life worth living, no matter how much you may doubt it at the moment, or doubt yourself, or your faith gets a little shaken. It can happen.
Yeah.
Yep.
You probably have a lot of new listeners out there. Just a little bit of background so everybody knows I'm not just somebody who just had a mild concussion or anything. I actually died twice, was in a coma for 3 weeks. I was told that I would be, my mother was told I'd be no more than a drooling head. I had 10 broken bones. I'm legally blind. I have ataxia, severe. I also have chronic acute anxiety disorder. And if I can do it, y'all can do it.
That's right. And you're doing it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's awesome. Well, we've got another caller. I'm going to let them on the line for just a moment. And I'm going to mute and then unmute you guys real quick. I'm getting some feedback, but it's probably from this new cable that we got laid today, finally, after 6 weeks. And I'll bring you guys back on one at a time. You know, before I bring on 520, so don't hang up. 520, I'm going to bring you right on. As happens so often in my life, before I became a host and met any other survivors, I either didn't notice these things or they didn't come up. I'm not really sure. I can't give an explanation. But today, when the man came who was overseeing the people that have been blowing us off for about 30 days, getting our cable laid, I started talking to the man, and I said, you better have that internet done by tonight, because I do a radio show, and I need my computer tonight. And if you thought I was nasty before, brother, you ain't seen nothing yet. That sucker better be fixed. And so he asked me what the radio show was about, and I told him. And then, of course, he shared a story with me about a car accident that he got into, and he got a spinal cord injury. Now, this guy was sitting in his truck, but he didn't have a wheelchair. And like so many of the stories we hear on here, he was told that he would never walk again. He was told, oh, geez, those horrible prognosis that a lot of us have heard that left him with little hope. He spent about 8 months in a rehab center. And he made up his mind and he told them, and I've heard a lot of you say that, I made up my mind and I told them, well, that might be what you say, but that's not the way it's going to work for me. And sure enough, this guy walks, got a little, he says, his words, got a little limp from time to time, but he's not in a wheelchair anymore, and now he's part of the silent epidemic because you would never know what he's been through by looking at him. But I also just thought, it's amazing. You know, if you tune in to the miracles, there are miracles going on all the time. But a lot of times we're so centered on self or preoccupied that we don't notice what's going on around us. And, well, of course, a lot of times we notice bad things going on around us, especially if we watch the news too often, read the news too often, then we notice a lot of bad things. But there's a lot of miracles and good things going on around us all the time that we don't often take the time to notice, kind of like that old stop and smell the roses cliche, truism, as it turns out. Being open to the universe and all of the good things that are happening can feed us that direction instead of the other direction. Instead of pulling us backwards, it can pull us forward. And I had been so angry and so mean, not to him, thank God, but to people on the phone the last 48 hours, because, as I said, we've been being put off and jacked around by company that we pay a lot of money to every month for the last 60 days, and I just have not been in the mood. And so I've been mean, and that's why this guy got sent out. He's, you guys will laugh about this, he's the quote-unquote escalation manager. So I'm not sure if they were afraid that I was going to bury the workmen instead of the cable in the backyard when they showed up today. But as it would happen, the escalation manager, I couldn't get mad at, right? Because I start out talking about the radio show, and he shares his story with me. He winds up taking one of my books with him, wants to tune into the radio show, and keeps in touch with the eighth floor of a hospital, a rehab hospital that I know of here in town, and does some volunteering there, and he's going to let all of them know about Brain Injury Radio. So you just never know. And so, Les, I think Dr. Maria should talk about that topic I want her to talk about next time, and I'll unmute you. You can rebut me later, but I will let on area code 520. You're on the line with Kim. Who's this?
This is John.
Hello, John. How are you?
A little disappointed today, but I have hope for tomorrow.
So what's going on today?
Well, I went to court yesterday and for a problem that I had in February, and I've been going through taking groups at my healthcare provider. and like DBT and one-on-one therapy and anger management and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I get them signed off on a piece of paper by the moderator or whatever they're called, the therapist.
Right.
And I had to turn it in, and I only had 14 groups that I went to, because the courts didn't accept all the groups I went to, so they only counted 14 of them. And I needed to get a letter from the judge to be allowed to move into an apartment complex that I wanted to. And 'cause right now, presently, I'm living at a group home, and I'm ready for independent living again. And the judge said that I hadn't completed enough groups, so I was disappointed. So I have 22 more groups for a total of 34 that I have to go through in order to get my charges dropped and have my record cleared. And everything. It was for breaking a window. I wasn't anything super illegal or something like that. But it was just for breaking a window because I wasn't allowed to order pizza, they said. And
I didn't know that ordering a pizza was against the law these days. It should be for me. I eat a little too much of it, but never been busted for it. So you broke the window with the pizza?
No, they wouldn't let me order a pizza, so they said I broke a window, which I think they just used it as an excuse because of my brain injury that I have a horrible memory of things after a certain amount of time, and
mm-hmm.
so I couldn't recall the actual event.
Right. Well.
So since I couldn't get the letter from the judge, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm a very good person and everything, and that's why it all surprised me when it happened. And, the judge said I had to go to 22 more groups and go through some more one-on-one therapy and things like that and continue to go to dialectical behavioral therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And which I enjoy. I happen to have met a nice woman in that class, in that group, and we're going to go shoot pool next week. And
awesome.
Yeah, so it was a blessing in disguise. And because I've been very lonely for quite some time now, and because of my brain injury and my involvement with women I'm not as smooth as I used to be. I used to be a player when I was in college, and now it's just I've slowed down so much with my interactions with women that it interferes with my communication skills in dealing with the opposite sex. But it's gotten a lot better. I mean, I used to be really bad. And, I don't know. But anyway, as I said, I have hope for the future because, you know, all I got to do is go to these 22 more groups and everything will be fine. You know, my record will be clean. It'll be as if nothing ever happened. And I'm going to a different apartment complex tomorrow morning, I think, or definitely Friday, to get an apartment, and I'll be able to live independently again, which is what I've been praying for, and I think God is finally answering my prayers. And, so as I'm saying, I have a lot of hope, and I'm feeling very fortunate that, you know, things could have been a lot worse, maybe. But
yep, they can
just,
always
you know,
be. Yep.
So
they can always
just
be a lot worse. And I did 3 years of DBT. I really like the DBT program, and you know, I understand your disappointment, but I think you're on the right track with your optimism and hope for tomorrow, because those extra sessions are just going to help fortify you for what's coming in your future. You know, it certainly won't hurt you to have another 22 sessions, even though you thought you were going to be done today. You know, we don't always we don't always know, you know, things are done in God's time, not our time, and we don't always know why that is. And I like to say, I don't like to say, because I don't like to accept it, but that a lot of times it's none of my business. You know, God's time is God's time, and I just do the deal and try to keep the attitude you have, you know, which is one of optimism. And I think the fact that you're slower and that you've changed your approach with the opposite sex is a good thing. I think it shows maturity on your part, and you're going to find the kind of partner that you're going to appreciate for the long run much more with this new maturity and these new skills that you're learning than you would have found back in the old days. I think that this change is going to serve you well in your future and be a very good thing for you, even if it's a little inconvenient right now. I think, you know, water seeks its level. If you were a player and not such a nice guy, that's the kind of girl you would have met. And now you're probably more genuine.
And would have gotten divorced like 3 times.
There you go. There you go. That's right.
Huh.
And so now you're going to be able to find somebody who is on a productive level like you are, and in a growing stage, or at least be supportive of your growing, and hopefully they're growing too, especially this girl that you met
in class. She's older than me.
How much older than you?
Which, 4 years.
That
I'm 41 and she's 45.
Well, I think that's okay, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I think that's, you know, it's definitely ballpark figures.
Well, hey, you're in the same decade. That's good enough. You know, that's good enough.
Yeah.
You know, and whether this
is
the one or not.
I've been told that my 40s are the best.
Yeah, they are. 40s really are, I think, good. I like the 30s, too, but I did have my ruptured brain aneurysm at 35, so my life did a 180 in the decade of my 30s. But in my 40s, I really enjoyed my 40s, and I think it sounds like they're going to be really, really good for you, too. And we all have setbacks from time to time, but your willingness to move forward and do what you need to do and not be bitter and angry about it, but just do the deal, pay your dues, you'll see the rewards from that. I have no doubt, because I'm the decade after
I
you.
I sustained my brain injury when I was 19 in college, and it prevented me from finishing college. But I'm optimistic to go back and finally graduate and things like that. and hopefully be able to write a screenplay that will marvel all screenplays.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, good. See, you got goals going on. You're on your way to independent living, so you're on track. You know, you're on the path, I think, that you were meant to find at this point. So your challenge is staying on that path and taking the positive actions that'll keep you on that path. And as annoying as that judge might have been today, might have been doing you a big favor just to give you that little extra boost that's going to help you through some of the challenges you're going to meet with the change that you're going to be going through, but it's a positive change. So I hope you're going to keep listening and stay in touch too. It'll be we'll be really anxious to hear about your new apartment and how these changes are going in your life.
Yeah, it's the apartment that I'm looking at is located in an area where my old apartment used to be that I lived in for 13 years and just vegetated. But I've grown a lot since then, and I'm very optimistic.
That's the way to be. That's definitely the way to be. Well, thank you for calling in. Go on.
I just like, you know, I've learned to deal with my difficulties and turn them around into strengths. And, you know, where I don't like to do things as fast as I used to. I like to take my time more and really smell the coffee, so to speak, while I'm trying to complete the task at hand. And I've had a lot of support. And, well, when I first got hurt, I had a lot of support from my family. But as I got older, you know, they were tired of over-comforting me, because I was getting older in age and I had gotten a lot better with my difficulties and things like that, where I was first in a wheelchair, and the doctors told my mother that, you know, I was going to be paralyzed, I wasn't going to be able to learn anymore. I mean, they were telling her all these bad things that would that could have resulted from my brain injury. And my mom said, my mom refused to believe it. And I refused to believe it, because when I was at my first rehab center, I remember the physical therapist, you know, my physical therapist was trying to work with me slowly, and I didn't want to work slowly. I wanted to start walking again, and I remember she asked me to play some baseball with her outside in the parking lot, and she set up bases and everything. And I do remember this because I still have semi-difficulties with my ankles. And I remember that when I hit the ball, she said, run the bases. And I ran the bases, and I felt like, I don't know what I felt like, but I just was running really weird. And I'm like, I hope I'm not like this for the rest of my life. But then I just refused to believe that I was going to be a paraplegic or something like that, or just someone who had to be in a wheelchair for the rest of his life. And I forced myself to build up my strength in my legs. And like sometimes when I walk now, it's been this September 17th, it'll be 22 years since my accident. And sometimes when I walk, I twist my ankle. And
sure.
And that's because I had weak ankles. And
right.
But, you know, now I just, you know, I put my, the palm of my foot down and I just circle my ankle around in a circle. And it feels better. And then I just start walking again, you know, and I don't let little things shut me down, so to speak. And
you compensated. You learned to compensate.
Yeah, yeah.
Decent.
And I just, you know, and you know, I'm 41 now, and I still feel like I'm in the prime of my life, and I pray every night, and I thank God for making it through such a difficult accident, because my roommate died in the accident who was driving.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I was just like, I could have been, you know, I could have been with him in heaven or whatever. And you know, I don't know, but it's sometimes difficult to deal with people who don't know anything about brain injury, or even some of the medical people who know about mental illness or something like that, but they don't fully understand the groundwork or whatever that comes along with brain injuries.
You can say that again.
And they don't understand that the brain injury exacerbated all my human qualities, or like my good and bad qualities. And, you know, because when someone hurts my feelings, I get really hurt. I get really depressed, and, you know, I start having SI. And I start having crazy thoughts about wanting to hurt myself, and you know, because I get so disappointed, and I'm like, you know, nobody understands what it is that's going through my head. And I used to have racing thoughts, but I think a lot more, and some of the problem that I have is I overthink about the same thing over and over and over and over, and to me it doesn't bore me or anything, but if someone else was to be in my head, they would go nuts, I think. And But then, like, it's weird how something simple like one word will start another train of thought.
Yeah.
And make me think of a million questions to go along with that one word, or thoughts, a million thoughts to go along with that one word. And it may not be a thought, it may not be a word, it might be a scene I've seen on TV, or a song I heard on the radio, or I might remember a conversation I had with someone, and it's the self-control of my brain and my thoughts are sometimes uncontrollable, and it's frustrating, I guess you could say.
It is. That's why that DBT helps, you know. Emotion regulation is one of the modules, and the anger management you took, I think it's good in my four A's that I talk about: awareness, acceptance, action, and adaptation, that, you know, you're in the process, you know, you're aware, and you've come to accept, whether you like it or not, you're taking the actions, and you will adapt. And the longer that you continue to practice those disciplines and be open, you know, the more that you're going to continue to improve. I don't want to cut you off, John, but we've got about 15 minutes left in the show. I'll call back in again, and I'll let your mics all come on. Looks like we have one more caller on the line, so I want to try to give everybody a chance. Area code 831, you're on the line with Kim. Who's this?
Anthony.
Anthony!
Yeah. I forgot to mention last night about the Wi-Fi thing. When I first started with the Wi-Fi back in 2007, or no, 2006. Anyway, no, it was 2007. Anyway, I noticed that suddenly, I never realized this, that suddenly I had to close one eye or the other to read a book.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't read with both eyes open because they're focusing differently and tracking differently. So if one was the other, but not both. You know, if I look like more than 3 feet away, no problem. But close in, I just couldn't read with both eyes open.
Yeah.
And it was totally nuts. And now I can. And it's like, oh my gosh.
It's a miracle. It is a miracle. And
well,
there's so many things that we have to adapt to. And what a blessing that that's not an issue for you now.
Yeah, it's like, I assumed it was the TBI. It's like, well, that's an interesting idea. And why would I think that? It's like my left eye, I could see double images. And that was with the Wi-Fi on. With the off, I have never had that happen again. And it's like,
awesome.
Yeah.
And
go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I'm looking forward to the show. You guys are going to be doing, I was looking forward to it last night, but I'm going to be looking forward to it even more on the EMPs and all of the work that you've done, and Les Paul has done the studying on all those. First, we started with the talk on cell phones, but in any case, and Anthony, I got to park you for just a second, and then I'll come back. Anybody who wants to call in, it's about 10 minutes till the hour. I'm probably going to play a couple of tunes tonight, got some new ones, probably going to play a little music, can bring some of you back on the line, but you have to be dialed in, otherwise it will drop you off the line in 10 minutes. So 424-243-9540 is the number. And Anthony, who was just on, and Les Paul, our Tuesday host, are going to be having a very interesting show on about the electromagnetic pulses that are running through our air all over the place, from cell towers to one night we were talking about, in fact, we watched a YouTube video that scared the hell out of Les Paul and I. We've been carrying our cell phones about a mile away from our ear as far as our arms will go because we watched a video that boiled eggs, hard-boiled an egg with two cell phones and a transistor radio. And Anthony told us about one that popped popcorn. Now, I don't want to steal their thunder, but be watching for Les Paul's Tuesday Night Dreamcatcher show, because in the coming weeks they're going to be having a really interesting, might even be a couple of shows on this topic, and it's quite the conspiracy. And I think where I draw a line on a conspiracy is that if there's that much talk about it, there's a kernel of truth in it. And that's ours to find. I will put a song on in just a minute, but I see one of my buddies in my area code who I haven't heard from for a while. So I want to say hi to Alan. How are you?
Hi, Kim. I just want to say enjoy the show. And next week I'll be in Omaha for the roundup.
You will.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it.
Are you going to come up Thursday or Friday?
I'm going to try to come up Thursday.
Thursday is the free one.
And
okay.
And then I'm going to be there the Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. We should talk. I'll talk to you before then, and maybe I can come there and meet you. We're going to have grandkids for Saturday, so I'm not sure I'm going to be able to make it to all of the roundup, but if you're going to be here in town, I want to come and see you. And one of the things I really want that we didn't get last time is that with all the indie musicians I have on the board who are here in my area, I've gotten a picture taken with them so I can post it. And when we got together and met that day, we didn't get a picture, and so I really want to get a picture of you and me, and so I'll be hunting you down so that we can get that done and just to say hi. So that's awesome.
Okay.
Let's talk.
Sounds
we'll talk
good.
On the phone before that, and I'll come there and meet you since I know
sure
where
thing.
It is. All right. That is ever
enjoy
cool.
The show.
Well,
okay.
Thank you,
see
Alan.
Later. All right, bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye. Awesome. Love it when Alan comes in. Here's a song that you all might enjoy, I hope. This is something that we've all struggled with from time to time, and some of you might be struggling with it right now. It is by one of our indie artists, Daniel Christian, and this song is called Find My Voice. Bet you can relate.
The question never seems to change. Are you with them or are you with us? And if it's true, I am not ashamed. There shouldn't be much to discuss. But for every answer that draws you near, there is an answer that will make you run. And as long as identity remains unclear, the coward will give the easy one. We can be automatic, carefully diplomatic. I need courage to speak my choice. Now that it's been a while since my courtyard denial, I am still trying to find my voice. I am still trying to find my voice. my brother is waiting to believe. We all love him just the same. There are gifts we both receive under the same sun and rain. I can't speak out of stillness, but I'm waiting to fill this space with courage to make my choice. How can we preach salvation from our own isolation? I am trying to find my voice. I am just trying to find my voice. Maybe we all have a role to play. Maybe this is my inauguration day. Finally getting used to my own skin. Never knew I would come this far. When you get too good at fitting in, it's hard to tell who you really are. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my voice. Now is the time to make my choice. Now is the time to find my voice. And now is the time to find my voice.
Daniel Christian. You can find him at danielchristian.com or on facebook.com/Daniel Christian Music. And I'm sorry, his website is danielchristianmusic.com. And that was the song Find My Voice. We've got just a couple minutes left. I will drag it over, but for those of you who aren't dialed in, who want to stay a little while longer, dial in 424-243-9540, or in about a minute and a half, it's going to drop you off the board. I want to thank everybody who's listened to the show tonight and who supports Brain Injury Radio, and those of you who support Recovery Now and come to my show. I'm going to close this part of my show, this live part of my show, in the usual way with something I believe we all have, and then I'll come back at the end of this song and unmute your mics and tell you guys goodnight. But never forget, in the darkest of night, that something we all have is a guardian angel. This is Guardian Angel by Leah West. Bless you and thank you. Thank you.
river to help with all the challenges. Let you soar higher than